This is episode 442 of Wheel Bearings. I am Sam Abual-Samet from Telemetry.
And I'm Roberto Baldwin from SAE and SAE Automotive Engineering Podcast.
Excellent. And Nicole will be joining us in progress, she promises. She said go ahead and start without her. She's apparently tied up with a work issue. So
Come on.
It's after 6:30 p.m. Eastern time on a Friday night. Who's doing work?
I mean, it's only 3:30 for me, so.
Okay. Well, whatever. While we're waiting for Nicole, I had a couple of different vehicles I drove this week. I had a Volvo XC90 B6 that I picked up from the airport when we returned from Mexico last week. This is pretty much like every other XC90, not dramatically different from the XC90s I've been driving on and off for better part of a decade now. It got a mid-cycle refresh, about a year and a half or so ago. So it got an updated grille and refreshed version of the headlights. And then in the interior, they put in a bigger display. And because they didn't really change the dashboard as a whole, previously the display was embedded in the dashboard. Now it sticks out sits out in front of the dashboard so they could fit it. And it's got the latest version of Volvo's Android-based infotainment system, which is good. It works, boots up reasonably fast. All the stuff works on there. You can download apps on it. And it still has support for CarPlay and Android Auto. The B6 version of the XC90 is kind of the middle of the range for the XC90 lineup. So the base model is the B5. So all the XC90s are all-wheel drive now. So there's the base B5 is a 2-liter turbocharged 4-cylinder 48-volt mild hybrid. At the top of the line, there's the plug-in hybrid, which has a turbocharged version of that engine and a 18.8 or so kilowatt-hour battery pack down the center tunnel and an electric motor, like 140-ish horsepower electric motor on the rear axle to make it a plug-in hybrid. And then the B6 is in the middle. So it has the turbocharged version of the engine, but it does not have any of the hybrid stuff. And it's all-wheel drive. It's rated at 295 horsepower, 310 foot-pounds of torque. It'll do 0 to 60 in about 6.5 seconds. So it's reasonably quick enough. It does all the things that XC90s have done for a long, long time. And it does it just fine. It's a handsome vehicle. It's not particularly outlandish in any way.
It's very Swedish.
It's very Swedish. Yes. Very restrained, refined. It looks good. But there's nothing about it that is likely to be too offensive to anybody either. It's a 3-row crossover, but the third row is on the tight side. You could put a couple of younger kids or a couple of Joel Simonellos back there. Probably not any Robbies in the back seat, in the third row seat.
No.
And then there's some cargo space behind the third row. You can fit a few roller bags in the back there. Certainly put a week's worth of groceries back there without having to fold down the third row seat. The B6 now also has the crystal shift knob that they previously was restricted to the plug-in hybrid. So it adds a little touch of style to the interior, something slightly different, that you won't find in, I think, pretty much any other car. It's a really pleasant place to be. The one I had had the wool seats in there, which are very nice. They're very comfortable. They're very supportive. It's just a great place to spend time. If you got a family to haul around and you want something premium that looks good, feels good, has decent ride quality, gets decent, not tremendous fuel economy, but decent fuel economy. It's rated at 23 miles per gallon combined. This is a really good choice. It's not cheap. They've gotten more expensive over the years. The B6 starts at $62,445. The one that I had, let me find the tab here with the Monroe. The one that I had was a loaded one, which was the Ultra. And so it had all the stuff. It had, the Volvo Pilot Assist system and the 22-inch wheels, which you don't really need that. The air suspension system, the Bowers & Wilkins premium sound system, which is $3,200. Sounds really good. Is it $3,000 worth of good? I don't know. it's a really beautiful place to spend time. The total suggested retail price on the Monroney came to $80,445. Yeah.
Cars are expensive.
They are very expensive.
I don't know if anyone's told our audience yet, but they're not cheap.
Hey everybody, if you haven't heard yet, new cars have gotten really, really expensive. It's kind of ridiculous. So you want to take a guess at the destination charge?
Ooh, 18.
No, it's only $12.95.
Ooh.
It's a bargain.
That's a, so, well, you know
they
what?
They just put it right in the sticker price. They don't try to hide it.
It's like, here you go.
So the other vehicle I had was the 2026 Kia K4 hatchback with a GT line turbo trim. And when I first drove the K4 back in late 2024, I was really impressed with it. I liked the way it drove, pretty much liked everything about it, except for the kind of the design of the back end of it. I wasn't crazy about the rear three-quarter
view. It's a little weird.
It's a little unusual.
It's like a bunch of stuff. It feels like a kind of a couple things thrown together, and they're like, ta-da! And you're like, are you guys okay? Are you okay over there? What's going on?
Yeah. Has the rear-end styling team talked to the front-end styling team recently? But apparently, when it came time to do the hatchback version, they had proper communications, or they just had the people that did the front three quarters of the car just finish it off at the back. And I think they did a fantastic job. I really like the K4 hatchback. And all that I just said also applies to the EV4, which unfortunately we're no longer in line to get.
Yeah.
We were supposed to get that. That was the compact electric sedan.
Womp, womp.
Yeah. And even before they shelved their plans to bring the EV4 to the U.S. market, for some reason they were only going to bring the sedan version. They were not going to bring the hatchback, which is sold overseas. And I think it should have been the other way around. I think they should have brought the hatchback instead of the sedan.
Yeah.
As it is, we're not getting either one now. But the K4 hatchback, I think, is a really good looking little car. Actually, not that little. It's a decent size. This is their competitor to like Civic and Corolla, and various other things. And the hatchback, is kind of like a little mini station wagon.
Yeah.
So it's got, long roof. So it's not like the Civic hatchback, which is almost the same profile as the sedan. So it's a fastback profile. This has kind of a longer roof, a more vertical rear end, and it looks really sharp. And, I drove it around. The GT line turbo has a 1.6 liter four cylinder turbocharged engine. Hello, Nicole.
Hello. Sorry, first work, and then my computer was mad at me and wouldn't cooperate, but I am here now. Sorry, guys.
So which work was it? Was it Nick harassing you?
It was Nick harassing me. In fact, it was Nick.
Just tell Nick, you got more important things to do on a Friday night.
I got to tell Nick that I just can't be doing job stuff. I have podcasting to do, for crying out loud.
Come on.
I know. He's such a taskmaster.
He is.
All right. Well, welcome.
Thank you.
I was just starting to talk about the Kia K4 hatchback that I drove.
Okay.
Like I said, I really like the way this car looks, and I also really like the way it drives. So, you know, with the hatchback, or with the GT line with the turbo four cylinder, it's about 190 horsepower, and it's a 8-speed automatic transmission. So it's not, you know, this is not a competitor for like a Civic Si. It's not a hot hatch. It's quick enough, you know, it'll do 0-60 in like mid 6-second range, which is good. It's fairly responsive, you know, not as responsive, you know, as say a similarly sized EV might be, but it's responsive enough. Because it's got the 8-speed automatic instead of a CVT, it feels a lot more pleasant to drive than say the base, the standard engine, which is a 2-liter naturally aspirated four cylinder with a CVT. The GT line turbo, I think, is much more fun. It's surprisingly roomy. I set, you know, the driver's seat for my position. You know, I'm about 5'10", 5'11", and then climbed in the back seat. I had several inches of gap, you know, from my knees to the back of the front seats. I had, you know, decent headroom, gap, you know, to headroom. The only issue is kind of, especially in the back doors, the roof line kind of curls over a little bit, for the door opening. But then once you get inside, you know, it's carved out. You have plenty of headroom when you're in the car. I just have to duck my head when I'm climbing into the back seat. But once I'm there, it was fine. You know, I could easily stay back there for an extended period of time. I would not be uncomfortable. And even with the headroom it's got, the seating position in the back is not like a real low seat. You know, you're sitting fairly up, you know, so it's not knees up in the air, which is also helpful. So it's very comfortable to sit in. Front seats are good. A lot of the bits on the dashboard look very familiar from other recent Kias, like the EV9. So you've got a mix of some mechanical switches on the dashboard for temperature and assorted other things, and then also some of the other volume knob and things like that. It doesn't have the multimodal panel that you have on a bunch of the recent Kias that switches between climate control and media control and, you know, navigation, which my wife is the one thing that my wife still finds a little annoying about our EV6, and they have that on a bunch of other Kias. The K4 does not have that, so that's definitely a benefit. As a general commuter car. You know, if you don't need something to go off-road, and well, let's be honest, most people don't need to go off-road. You know, if you just want a car to get to work, get to school, whatever, do the things you got to do, something like the K4 size is actually a really fantastic choice. As I said, you know, there's mechanical switches for temperature, fan speed. There's the volume roller in the middle of the dash there, just below the touchscreen, like they have on the EV9, buttons for home to pick the home screen, map, search, media modes, things like that. And then there's a drive mode button, which is kind of unusually placed in the lower, like in the middle of the lower spoke on the steering wheel. And the steering wheel on this one is one of those, like we find on a lot of cars now, where it's sort of a slightly squared off wheel. So it's not square, but the top and bottom have been flattened. And if you actually go through and measure everything, you find that what they've done is it's not so much that it's been flattened. A better way to think about it would be if they heated it up so it softened and then pulled from the top and bottom corners out a little bit. So basically creating a larger aperture so you can see the instrument cluster. So it's less obstructing of the gauges that are directly in front of you. So it opens up that little window to the gauges. On the downside, though, is that like the EV9, it's basically got the same panel, the same display panel that's in the EV9. So you got a 12.3-inch gauge display in front of you. There's a 12.3-inch touchscreen off to the right in the center. And then in between those is another panel for some of the climate control stuff where you can select if you want it to blow on your feet or on your face or both, or the defoggers. And that falls right in your steering wheel is right in the middle of your sight line for that part of the panel there, which I thought was strange on the EV9. It's strange on some of the other cars that they're doing it on. But other than that, you know, ergonomically, the rest of this car is really good. The one that I had the exterior is what they call interstellar gray. It's basically a dark gray. The interior is labeled as black, but I think, I had the GT Line red interior color package. So it's not all red. What you have is on the steering wheel, the center airbag module is red, and then the inner portion of the top part of the steering wheel is red. And then there's red accents in the door cards and the seating area. So most of the seat is black, but then red on the surfaces that you actually sit on, which is, it looks pretty cool. It's a cool look. I like it. In the back seat, there's also vents for the back seat passengers and a pair of USB-C charging ports. There's a Qi wireless charging port in the front of the center console, a couple of big cup holders with the thing that Kia has been doing for a few years now, where the cup holder can adapt to the size of what you're carrying. So if you've got a giant water bottle like my wife likes to have, there's a portion of the cup holder that basically rotates around into the side portion of the console. So you get a nice big opening for those big giant water bottles. But if you've got a narrower bottle or a cup or something like that, you just press a button and that thing flips around. And so it'll retain your smaller items as well. So it's rated at 28 miles per gallon combined. I got about 27 on my mileage loop that I did the other day. And all in, let's see, the GT Line starts at 28,790. The one that I had, grand total came to 32,770. Guesses on the destination charge?
11.
10.95.
Robbie beat you by $5.
Oh,
it's $11.95.
Oh, yay. Man.
Very close. Very close. So, yeah, I like the K4. I mean, I've liked the K4 since I first drove it. And the K4 hatchback is just, it kind of perfects the formula of the original K4 sedan because it looks better, has more cargo space in the back. And it's a good car to drive.
I liked it. I drove it too, and I thought it was good.
There's a world of opportunity out there beyond the typical 9-to-5, where purpose and grit come together, where the American spirit and ingenuity are welcomed in places that could really use your skills and your experience. We're talking about the Peace Corps, with volunteers living and working in communities around the globe. It's been called the toughest job you'll ever love. Tough because it asks so much of you to dig deeper, to get your hands dirty, to go that extra mile, to rise to the occasion and meet challenges head on. And the love part comes from being something bigger than yourself, from building bonds that last a lifetime. It's knowing your hard work transformed lives, including your own. After 65 years, the Peace Corps is still the toughest job you'll ever love. Explore opportunities in more than 60 countries, learn about benefits, and apply at peacecorps.gov/serve.
Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. We've updated the Wheel Bearings merch store, and now there's a whole bunch of new choices, new colors, new styles, t-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, hats, mugs, travel mugs. stickers, aprons, tote bags, you name it. You can get your Wheel Bearings merch at shop.wheelbearings.media. Go check it out. That's shop.wheelbearings.media. All right. What have you been driving, Nicole?
I have been driving, living the minivan life. I have the Toyota Sienna Platinum, which is the fanciest of the versions of the Sienna. It's a hybrid. It's only available as a hybrid. It's a 2.5-liter four-cylinder. It has 245 horsepower. It's fine. It gets good fuel economy. It's estimated at 35 city, 36 highway. It's not a plug-in. This is just a straight-up hybrid. And, you know, I've never been a big minivan fan, but they do have their place in the world. The things I thought about that
Which
I noticed...
Which is everywhere.
But you know what? They're just...
I mean, if you got a band or you got kids...
Absolutely. Or if you have dogs... Like, I know people who do show dogs and they love it because you can fit these huge amount of stuff in, like, the dog crates that are giant can slide
or
in there.
Or if you're transporting rescue dogs across the Great
Wild
West.
There you go. Transporting rescue dogs. But I do find... You know, I always find...
You have friends. You want to go somewhere.
Well, but here's the funny thing. So if I drive, like... An F-250,
you don't want to lift
some
things too high.
Great big like truck, right? And the truck's big, like, you know, more cumbersome. Somehow it feels less bulky to me than a minivan. Minivans just have this like cumbersome kind of ho-to-ho-to-ho thing. I don't know. I'm
like
not
it's...
a minivan fan. It's me.
That
it's
sounds like
minivan.
A that
it's
sounds
me.
Like a mind thing.
It's no, I just don't need it. And like they all have the very long, like the dashboard that really goes like, you know, it's very I mean, the windshield is very, very long. Like, you can't reach where the dashboard meets the windshield because it's so far. It just feels like I'm driving something huge. I don't know why. But despite the fact that I don't like minivans as a whole, this is a good minivan. Like, I like what it's comfortable. It's very quiet. It has tons of storage. I do like this. So the store, you have so many cup holders. It's amazing. I forget that they just love cup holders and minivans. There's two up in the front and then there's two more up in the front. There's spaces to put your, you know, water bottle. Your wife would be happy. You can put your water bottle on the side of that. There's a huge space under the center console, not like that you lift up for storage, but just a flat storage space that you could easily put like an entire tote bag underneath there. But it's great because truly when you, especially if you're using this and you've got kids, which you probably do, you always have stuff in your hands. You're always getting in the car with stuff. You've got something. You've got a paper a teacher handed you. You've got something. You've got, you know, someone's shirt that they took off for no reason. You've got your keys. You've got your wallet. You've got random snacks, the rock they handed you because now you have to treasure this. What do? You can throw everything in there. I love this little space that they have there. It's nice and easy to access, and it does have a little lip to the edge. So if you put stuff that's small in there, it's not going to go like careening out under your foot the first time you take a corner. Utility-wise, minivans are fabulous. Like they really do, they do everything that you want it to do for a family. You can get the second row. It has, you can get captain's chairs. So you got seating for six, math, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Seven.
If you get the second row bench, yeah.
So if you get the bench, you get seven. Ridiculous amount of
like
cargo
real
room.
Seating. Like real, yes. Like you can actually sit in the third row.
You can
seating.
Sit in
not like a SUV third row. You're like, oh, okay, well.
SUV's third rows
let me
are
stick
hard
my
to get
knees
to.
In my chest.
Yes, they're hard to get to. Your knees are in your chest. The getting to them, like around the rear, the second row seats is always a little cumbersome. You can get to these easy. You can walk right between the captain's chairs. Practically, kids can practically walk like standing up just because of how the car is situated. You know, it has a nice low floor so you can easily lift stuff up into it. Utility-wise, these things just, they knock it out of the park. It also has a 12.3-inch infotainment touchscreen. You've got wireless Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. There's, I think, 7 USB ports. So they're all over the place. So it doesn't matter where you're sitting, you're going to be able to charge your stuff. And it is a comfortable and quiet ride. And I don't think you can underestimate how important that is when you have kids, because there is nothing worse than getting a kid to finally nap in a car, only to have some loud noise outside your car wake them up, or a random bump in the road wake them up. When you want your kids to sleep and you're in the car, you want your kids to sleep. And this
are you saying that it might not be a great idea to transport your small children in a Ram TRX?
Probably not. I mean, you could, but I don't think it would go well for you. I don't think it'd go well for you. Because I remember when my kids were little and there would be like some random pavement that would vibrate through the wheels. You get that road noise, and suddenly the baby that you've been waiting to fall asleep on your road trip is like, and you just want to stab yourself in the eye with a fork. Like, it's just, it's terrible. So I appreciate that this is comfortable. It's quiet. It has storage. It has all the little things that you need for just family life. And it looks good. It actually is a nice interior. It doesn't look down market. And, making a minivan, it's the thing with some SUVs. There's SUVs that you can get that are very fancy, right, that have seating for your whole family. But there is always the risk that you have a family and they get the weirdest things. Kids, I don't know, they find sticky stuff everywhere they go. And you don't even know what the sticky stuff is. You're like, what is this stuff? Like, I don't know. Where did it come from? Don't know that either. But
have
yet
you,
it's in the car.
That's the thing is you're traveling through life as an adult. And you're like, my hands are rarely sticky.
Right.
But as
somehow,
a child, everything is
unless
no matter
ribs.
Where you are.
Right.
You
well,
put
yeah.
them in a you put them in a sanitized concrete room with nothing in it. You put them in there for 5 seconds. They turn around, hands are sticky.
Right. Yeah. And what is it? You don't know.
I think they just ooze it out of their skin.
They ooze stickiness. So yeah, so it's nice to have an interior in a vehicle that looks nice, that feels nice, and that doesn't feel like something that you're afraid to have your kids in. Like, they're gonna make a mess of your car. They're gonna be hard on it, but this car is gonna survive it. It's not one of those that you're gonna have it and after 2 weeks you're gonna look and say, I made a terrible mistake. My beautiful interior is stained and a mess and sticky and gross forever. It's easy to clean this. So I got it. It was right after the one snowstorm we had that dumped about 2 feet of snow down where my car comes from. So the guys drove it up here, and when he opened it to clean it, was trying to get it all tidy. Some of the salt / sand / water snow dripped along the side of the door. And when that dries, it creates, not sticky, but this horrible crusty mess that can actually ruin leather on a car because it's got salt in it. And I went inside and got a wet paper towel and it wipes right off. And you have no idea that it's there. That's the kind of durability you want in a car, that you can put that caustic, drippy water that gets on your car during the winter, and it just is like, no problem.
Did the Sienna you have the built-in vacuum cleaner in the back?
I did not check for the built-in vacuum cleaner. I didn't open the back, because if you open the back, Sam, there's so much stuff, dirt, sand, salt, wet, everything. If I open the back, I'm going to wear it. I'm sorry, I wasn't willing to do that. I didn't need to. I was unwilling.
Fair enough. I know they do offer a built-in vacuum.
Yes.
It tucks into the left rear corner in the cargo area.
I have seen that before, and it's fabulous. It's great.
It's great for soaking up all those Cheerios and assorted other detritus that the little ones leave around.
One of the times that I had this, a different time where I had the Sienna, it was fall, and I got things at the farmer's market. I didn't realize quite how gross the bottoms of everything I got was until I took it out. And I looked at the back. I'm like, oh, no. And I used a little vacuum, cleaned it all up. It was perfect. So
apparently, the Sienna has 18 cup holders.
18.
So that means in the six-seat configuration that you had with the captain's chairs, you got three cup holders for every person in the car.
Yeah.
I love this.
I like
this.
Having lots of drinks. I will typically have at least two drinks on my desk. I'll have a water and something else. And then occasionally I end up with three drinks. And I will drink them all. Like, I won't finish one and start the other. I'll drink them all at the same time.
Well, and that's the thing. When you're driving too, you have the drink you start with, right? And you have for me, that would be a Diet Coke. And you have the Diet Coke and you drink almost all the Diet Coke, but there's a little bit left. And then you go in someplace and then you realize your Diet Coke, there's a little bit left in the car, it's no longer drinkable, but you got a new Diet Coke. But then you bring it in. Where do you put that old little bit? If there's not a trash can next to you, you can now relocate it to a less convenient cup holder, leave it there until you're near a trash can and you can take everything out, because you don't want the cup just rolling around the floor, because if you leave it anywhere on the floor, you're going to step on it or your kids are going to step on it, thus increasing the sticky we mentioned earlier. So it needs to remain in the cup holder even if you dump out that little bit of soda or whatever.
So Nicole, on a typical road trip, by the time you get to your destination, how many cups of Diet Coke residue do you typically have in your car by the time you get there?
Well, there's normally two Diet Cokes in my car at any given time. Two is normally my minimum. I normally have the one that I just got that is fresh and cold and frosty, preferably from McDonald's, because they have the best Diet Coke. Or second class Diet Coke would be a can. I like cans of Diet Coke. So there'll be like a can shoved in the door.
Yeah, it can't
and the
be
Diet...
a bottle.
Oh,
the plastic
the
bottle, that's
the
gross.
Plastic bottles are, you
first
taste
of,
the plastic.
First of all, you can taste the plastic, and also mm-hmm. single-use plastic is the worst thing on the planet. So now you can buy giant like aluminum cans of Diet Coke.
Those are the best.
Yeah.
Like when you walk into like the gas station, you've just gassed up, and you go and you're like, I hope they have a Diet Coke. Not only do they
have
one
like the little can,
in a
but
can,
they have a giant
it's the
can.
Giant one. Yes. Yeah. I've complained about the little cans. Sometimes on the drive programs, they have the coolers at lunch, and they have, like, the half-size cans.
Oh, the little
and every
baby
time,
ones?
The big ones.
I like the little
like,
baby
what is,
ones. It's just
no,
enough.
I'm like,
it's like a little,
what is this?
It's like a little snack. Like I'm already drinking too much Diet Coke, so I'm
going
to bring it
it's
down
bold. I'm like, no, this is – I can't say that word, can I, on the show? This is
sure
bull poo. This is bullshit. You don't get tiny little cans of Diet Coke. You give me a full-size Diet Coke. I want a full-size Diet Coke, or don't even bother. So, yeah.
I've always hated Diet Coke. On the rare occasions
oh my God,
when I actually
friends?
Drink a Coke, I prefer to drink like regular Coke. Actually, I prefer to drink Mexican Coke from a bottle. Full sugar, no corn syrup, none of this corn syrup stuff. If I'm going to go there, I might as well do it properly.
But proper is the Diet Coke. The Diet Coke is the best of the Cokes. I love all of it.
No.
All whatever secret herbs and spices, chemicals that are in there that are going to kill me 5 years
I'm
early.
I'm
okay
get cancer.
With it.
I'm so excited.
It's okay. I enjoyed every mouthful of that cancer-y Diet Coke. I loved it.
A graphic online, and it called Diet Coke time to get another fridge cigarette.
Fridge cigarette.
Yes.
It's a fridge cigarette. Yes. I am addicted to fridge cigarettes. I love them. I love the Diet Coke. I will not give it up. I will be. That's the one. That's going to be my vice forever. I don't care what they can't tell me I can't have, but I will die by my Diet Coke. There we go. Sorry. We were talking about the Sienna, which can hold lots of Diet Cokes.
Yeah.
Apparently, at least 18 simultaneously.
At least 18. I should go get 18 cans of Diet Coke and take a picture.
So 19.
19.
You can have one in your hand and 18
in
the cup holders.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. This is perfect. See?
All these fridge cigarettes on Etsy are for women. I'm like, come on, guys. Dudes, oh, there's one way down at the bottom.
You're looking at Etsy stuff for Diet Coke. I have someone who sends, I have people who send me just, we communicate solely in Diet Coke memes, like members of the automotive media and some of the PR people.
Do you remember the ad in a couple of years ago where the guy, the taxi driver from the Deadpool movies, he was in a Diet Coke ad. And the Diet Coke ad was essentially like, hey, F you, I'm going to have a Diet Coke.
I did not remember that.
He's walking down the street. He's like, hey, you want a Diet Coke? Just have a Diet Coke. It was very much... like a reaction to somebody somewhere had talked to the Diet Coke marketing team, and they were like, you know, people are giving people crap about Diet Coke. She's
you
like,
better just
you know
tell
what?
Them all to Apple.
Tell them all that. Go to hell.
Now I need a Diet Coke. Dang it! I'm going to pause after this. You're going to see me disappear. I'm going to mute. I'm going to get a Diet Coke.
I mean, I can attest. I have seen Nicole at drive programs. You know, right after breakfast, first thing before we go anywhere else. Where's the Diet Coke? Got to get a Diet Coke before we go for a drive.
And if they don't have a Diet Coke, I probably have dragged you. I know I've dragged other people to the nearest McDonald's on the drive route to go get
one. Wow. I won't do that. I'll just like, well, I guess this is what I got to get. If they offer you Diet Pepsi at a restaurant, will you take it?
I do, but I take it and it hurts my heart a little bit. Sometimes I'll just give up and be like, no, I don't want it. Just give me water. I have to be, it has to be the right move because I don't like Diet Pepsi. Ugh.
That I mean, that's a perfectly reasonable thing to say. I can stand behind that.
Okay.
I am not a Pepsi person either. All right. So how much did this thing cost?
Oh shoot! I just
57,000 Diet Cokes.
I just accidentally closed this stupid thing. Wait a minute. Let me open the stupid thing. Hold on a second. Let's see. Shoot. I totally, you know what? It's been, I need the Diet Coke now, not 5 minutes ago. I can't tell you. It's a secret because my document won't open back up. It is. So the price on the Platinum, the MSRP is $57,810. So it's not cheap.
It's if you really love your children.
Or yourself, because the front seats are super comfy.
You can buy one. There's one for 40. It starts at 40 and a half.
You can,
but if you really love your children, you get the Platinum.
Exactly. So you guys,
if you kind of love them, you're like, you know what? They're around.
Yeah,
they're
you'll get the LED.
I just got to get them from one place to another.
Got to get into
safety,
preschool, whatever.
Not spend too much money on gas.
I don't want to get carried away.
Take them to their random sport band
of the week, sport
drama,
band practice, dance,
club
whatever.
Event. They got to go to their D&D like game, or they have to go to their football game, or they have to go to, I don't know, whatever. I don't have any children. I don't know.
what are we taking each now? So you guys want to guess a destination?
13.
14.
Sam gets it. $14.95.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Well.
You were so close. Like this close.
It's pretty close.
All right.
That's everything. All I can think about is the diet. I just bought 35 Diet Cokes yesterday at Costco. So
35?
Well, they come in a big giant thing of 35.
Oh, really?
I don't know why.
Okay.
Maybe it's 36. I don't know. They're just a big pallet of Diet Cokes. And I'm like, oh, I guess I better buy a pallet of Diet Cokes. And
I mean, you know, they used to come in like 6-packs and 12-packs. So I would have thought
Costco,
it would be some multiple of six.
It's Costco, so you have to get a bunch of them. But I also buy like the vegetable drinks.
Wait.
Oh, you have caffeine free? What's the point?
Because it's late here. It's later here. It's late in the hours. Drink so just. Wait,
I had
hold on.
The Coke machine in our practice space last night. I had band practice, and it works 20% of the time, and 75% of the time when it does work, it gives me multiples of what I've paid for. So I got 4 Diet Cokes last night during band practice for the price of one. It was
See,
a Diet Coke miracle.
That would be a reason to celebrate.
So I'll all carry them back to the practice space. I'm like, look, everybody. And everyone's like, what's wrong with you?
I got all these free Diet Cokes.
Sorry. We should call Coke, see if we can sponsor this.
That's who should sponsor Diet Coke. Would I get unlimited? I would just do it for unlimited lifetime Diet Coke. It would be a bad deal for them because it costs more than whatever they'd pay us, I'm sure.
Kidneys are all rotted.
I don't care.
Wizened. All right. There's some news, right?
Yeah. So the other day, Honda put out a press release because the EPA put out their annual automotive trends report. The EPA has been publishing this for decades. And to be honest, I'm kind of surprised that they're allowed to still continue publishing it under the current regime. But they still put it out. And it's got all kinds of interesting data in there, including the corporate average fuel economy numbers for every automaker. And so among full-line automakers that sell both combustion and electric vehicles, so overall, the company that had the highest average fuel economy was Tesla. But, of course, they only sell EVs.
Right.
And so their average was 117.1 miles per gallon equivalent. But among all the other car makers that sell both combustion and electric vehicles, Honda came out on top last year or for model year 2024, which is the last full year of data. They're still waiting on preliminary data for 2025. They averaged 31 miles per gallon across all the vehicles they sold.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's pretty good. That's pretty impressive.
So what's funny, they were number one, but let's give props to number two. Hyundai came in 29.8. They're very close.
And Kia right behind them at 29.2. Toyota at 29.0. Toyota, Nissan, and BMW. BMW all got 29.0 miles per gallon. You know who did not do so well?
Who? Tell us. Do tell.
Ford, GM, and Stellantis. Stellantis has been at the bottom of this list since like 2011.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they sell is chargers,
and it's like it's a big difference. It's not like we went from 31 for Honda to just a little bit lower. Stellantis's number is 22.8.
Yeah, so the overall average for the industry was 27.2. And then Mercedes-Benz was at 26.1. And then it drops down to Ford at 23.4, GM at 22.9, and Stellantis at 22.8.
Okay, America.
GM just barely... Stellantis must be like, oh, if we had only sold, like, something else.
One more Daytona.
Well, one more something.
Well, to be fair, Stellantis has improved from 21.2 to 22.8 because they sold a bunch of plug-in hybrids and a few BEVs.
Yeah.
There you go.
So that, you know, that boosted their numbers.
You can't plug them in, but you got them.
Exactly. Technically.
Hey, it's all based on the numbers that are on the Monroney. That's what counts. Yeah. So, you know, as long as it gets through the certification testing without catching on fire,
it's good to go.
It counts.
That's what a happens low bar, once, Sam.
what happens once it's in customer hands?
Who knows?
Not their problem anymore.
It's not the EPA's problem. Yeah.
So it's a little embarrassing. Yeah, I mean, granted, Ford, GM, and Stellantis, you know, between them, they sell a lot of full-size trucks, a lot of full-size SUVs.
It's a lot.
Which nobody else does.
And biggins vehicles. They sell a lot of gas-guzzling giant machines.
Yeah. And nobody else in the industry sells those. But still, that's a pretty sad number.
It's pretty, yeah. You're like 22.
I'm just thinking, it's a
like, wait,
sad.
What year is this?
I know. Gosh.
When you look at it, you're like, man.
I mean, I guess they would get props for being better, but it is kind of scary spice there that the automakers in the U.S. are so low. Ooh.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, Stellantis has been. Let's see. Stellantis has been at the bottom of this list every year since 2015.
Oh, sorry. That's me. So frustrated I smacked the microphone. Sorry.
And then even before that, they had multiple years, you know, when they were at the bottom of the list. But, you know, apparently Detroit doesn't really care about fuel economy.
Womp womp.
So let's move on. I'll have a link. There'll be a link in the show notes to get the trends report. You can download it, at least until somebody in Washington figures out that it exists and, you know, wipes
they'll
it from the internet.
They'll just flip it. So, like, it'll be like, America.
Yeah.
We're using all the oil. I'm like, wait, what? No, that's, we don't, it's a finite, you know, that's not a, all, okay.
Womp, all right.
Womp.
So, apparently, Range Rover is planning to launch their first EV sometime in the coming months, and it will apparently be an electric version of the Velar, the next generation Velar. Oh. Autocar, the British publication, has some spy photos of this. So the current Velar, you know, is a fairly conventional, you know, crossover-ish SUV kind of thing. Wagon shaped, but it looks like this new electric Velar is ditching that and going for a fastback shape, going electric SUV coupe.
All right.
Okay, that's different.
Okay.
I mean, it's all right.
Yeah.
That's kind of the thing that everybody's doing.
The Velar
though, right?
Is just like when it comes to the Velar, everyone's like, oh yeah, that's there. That's a thing.
That's a car.
Oh, yeah, they still make that. It's a product in our lineup.
Yeah, we still have the Velar. I would say make a, you know, the Defender, but, you know, Mercedes didn't sell a lot of electric G-Wagons, even though it is, in fact, the best G-Wagon, and I got Mercedes to admit that it is. And it's fantastic, by the way, the electric G-Wagon. I had it for a week, and I got to write it up, but... Yeah, I guess people. You know, I mean, when you're rich, you're like, I want to be the.
Well,
I mean, these
know,
are the both those cars are Instagram cars.
Yeah.
So you want the like the most Instagram video, whatever. But you can do the spins. You can spin in the G-Wagon. Anyway, sorry. So anyway,
anyways, you're on level ground.
Tangent. Yeah, that's fine.
You're on level ground. It's still like whee. Is it helpful? I don't know.
But it's fun.
It is fun.
If you got enough money to afford a G-Wagon, you know, you want to have a little fun with
Roger Federer,
Federer, the
tennis guy. Yes. So I talked to him about his electric G-Wagon, and I asked him if he'd done a G-turn yet, and he said no. And I was like, oh, Roger.
You got to take it out onto the center court at Wimbledon.
Yeah,
you
know,
do it on the grass.
Come on, Roger, you can do it.
I'm sure they won't mind.
He's very nice, man. Very nice. Very kind. Anyway.
So the current generation Velar is basically Range Rover's version of the Jaguar F-Pace. It's on the same platform as the F-Pace. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see if, you know, assuming the Jaguar ever actually launches another vehicle into production, you know, if we see, you know, an electric version of the, or a version of this electric Velar as a Jaguar in the next, you know, 10, 15 years.
The I-Pace was a good car outside the weird, you know, issues that they had with it. Like driving, yeah. I was like, this is a good EV.
Yeah.
And they were so early to it too. I think they made a really big leap before most anyone else. The car was actually good. It was fun to drive. They took us to a track in Portugal to drive on a track. Then they took us off-roading in it. And we forded through water and up a hill. And, you know, besides the usual Jaguar, you know, electrical stuff that, you know, they had, it was a good car. I mean, it's the car that Waymo
British.
Uses.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
although
British.
It was built in Austria, but.
Oh, well, then they should have been fine. Yeah. Oh, well.
I mean, it worked. Yeah, like you said, it works fine for Waymo.
Yeah. Works fine for Waymo. It's a good car. I like the car. Yeah. It's, you know, it's just, you know, it's Jaguar.
Yep. It's Jaguar. So Toyota, yeah, do you guys remember the Celica?
Yeah.
Yes, I was just talking to someone about that today.
I said there was a Celica in the parking lot the other day, and I took a picture and sent it to some friends. It was like really clean.
Someone
I think
sent
I still
me
have
a
it on my phone.
Of a 1977 Toyota Celica that was actually a Star Wars edition created by a company called Delphi Auto Design, and it was part of the space fantasy sweepstakes.
What?
A Star Wars edition Celica? Wow.
Yes. It's a Star Wars. It was, yeah, a 1977 Toyota Celica GT Star Wars edition, and it was for 20th Century Fox's space fantasy sweepstakes to promote A New Hope. A custom hand-painted airbrushed graphic on the hood. It actually is incredibly cool. This is the Celica I want. I wonder who won it and whatever happened to it. Because it's really cool. You can Google it and see it. It's really cool.
I'll have to look that up.
I want that one.
Star Wars.
I'm not even going to send you guys the Celica that I saw now after this. After that story,
Celica.
I'm like, oh.
Oh, wow. This is cool.
Yeah, right?
It's got Chewbacca on the hood.
Yeah. It has the picture from the... Oh, no, wait. That's not real. The one on the car and driver thing you're looking at, that's not it. Look for the one that has Darth Vader R2 and C-3PO standing by the real car.
Oh, here we go.
And it's like the cover of A New Hope. The poster.
Yeah, it was the movie poster.
The movie poster. And then it looks like there's
some
stuff along the sides.
Yeah, so it's got Luke standing in the middle with his lightsaber up over
his
head.
In case, I'm actually mimicking Luke. This is what this was, in case you guys are wondering. This was the poster with Darth. I was holding my hand like there's a lightsaber. They're probably
He's
both looking at me
lightsaber,
like,
and
what is Nicole doing? Yeah. So,
And there's a photo here of... Darth Vader, C-3PO, C-3PO looking under the hood, and R2-D2 with this Star Wars edition Celica.
Right? And it looks like there's that, like, where you'd have, like, racing stripes. It almost looks like, and it's hard to see because there's exactly one photo of this, that there is a stripe along the side that has, it looks like X-Wings and TIE Fighters duking it out, like they're fighting along the side of the car.
Very cool.
I want this
one. Anyway...
Sorry, Robbie. Yeah, go ahead.
there's been speculation recently that Toyota's bringing back the Celica. It's been the nameplate has been out of production for since the late 90s, I think, was when they discontinued the last one, maybe early 2000s. And so they're supposedly bringing it back. And yesterday, as we record this, Toyota on some... some apparent social media site that I've never heard of called X. They posted some a couple of photos and also some video clips of their next generation World Rally Championship car undergoing testing. It's wrapped in camo, and apparently There's speculation that this is the new Celica.
That would be kind of cool if they bring it back. But do you think it's just a rally car? Just a rally car?
Well, I mean, there's got to, in order to run it in World Rally Championship, there has to be a production car.
There has to be a car, right?
It's got to be based on a real product.
Is this one that's wrapped in camo? Am I looking at the right picture? It's like red and black and white?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the overhead views. So, you know, kind of a fastback coupe. When I first saw it, I thought, it looks kind of like a CHR, but with big bulging fenders. But then when you look at it, you know, the proportions are a little different from a CHR.
It has a massive wing on the back.
Yeah. So that should be, we may see that, you know, in the next 12 months or so. Because I think 2027 season, is when these next generation cars, new set of regulations for World Rally Championship go into effect. So this car will be running next year. So probably by the end of the year, we should see the production car that this is based on. So the Nissan Pathfinder has been one of Nissan's better selling vehicles in North America. It's kind of changed a lot over its history. It started off as a body on frame SUV based on the pickup truck, the compact pickup truck. Eventually evolved into a unibody crossover. There's reports that for model year 2029, so like possibly as early as 2028, the Pathfinder will be split into two separate vehicles with the same name. They're both called Pathfinder. One will be an updated version of the current generation Pathfinder. The other will become a three-row body-on-frame SUV based on the new Xterra that's coming.
Cool.
What do you think about that?
I mean, the Pathfinder, when it came out, it was, you know, it was like, oh my God, like off-roading. It was like this rugged machine that everyone wanted. And then it just sort of morphed into like, you know, essentially, I mean, SUVs are mostly minivans, to be honest, especially big ones. They're just minivans.
They're less practical minivans.
Yeah. Less practical, yes.
Yeah. And so, you know, and then the Xterra took the place of the Pathfinder, and then it went away because Nissan, you know, had like $4. So then you're like, well, we can't have two.
It must pick.
So, yeah, it'll be interesting to, like, you know, this idea of splitting up the Pathfinder to sell the more calm one, the sell the one to like the regular folks, and then the off-roady Pathfinder to the folks who will also drive it to the exact same place as the squishy version.
It's the squishy version.
But they'll upfit it like there's no tomorrow. We're gonna put a snorkel on this. I'm like, all right.
So apparently, you know, it wouldn't be the first time that they've had two distinctly different Pathfinders, because when the original Armada was introduced back in the mid 2000s, based on the first generation Titan, it was originally like for the first model year or two, it was actually called the Pathfinder Armada. And then they dropped Pathfinder from the name and just called it Armada from that point forward. But, you know, this will be a little different, you know, because that was a substantially bigger vehicle than the regular Pathfinder. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with this, you know, kind of take the Pathfinder back to its roots as a body-on-frame off-roader.
Yeah. By the second generation, the styling was already like, meh.
Yeah.
The first gen was like, oh, this is rad.
Yeah, the first gen Pathfinder was cool looking.
And it was like, it was that, and that was like when they were like, it was based on like the hard body trucks. And there's a documentary called Hands on Hard Body. Everyone go watch it. But but that was based on before they changed the name from Datsun to Nissan in the US, the truck was called the Nissan. So it was very weird. So I remember the little theme song and everything, but it was the Nissan truck sold by Datsun. And you're like, that was their way of sort of easing people into the Nissan name. So, yeah. Anyway, little Nissan trivia. Maybe they could change the name back to Datsun. That'd be fun.
Yeah. Call it the Nissan Datsun.
The Nissan Datsun.
The Nissan Datsun.
The Datsun truck by Nissan.
The Datsun truck, yeah.
All right, let's move on. The week after Toyota had their drive program for the BZ Woodland and the CHR in Ojai, California, Subaru had their own drive program a little bit further south of there with two basically identical cars with different names and different headlights called the Uncharted and the Trail Seeker. And those reviews are out. And basically, they're exactly the same as the Toyotas. They drive the same because they are the same vehicles. But there are a couple of distinctions. First of all, the CHR is only being offered in a dual motor all-wheel drive version with 338 horsepower. And Subaru is actually offering a single motor front-wheel drive version of the Uncharted, which you can't get from Toyota.
Which is weird for Subaru, by the way. Everything is all-wheel drive except for the BRZ.
Yeah, and now the Uncharted. But the all-wheel drive Uncharted will have a little more range. It'll have 308 miles of range, and it'll have a lower starting price than the CHR, starting at $34,995 plus destination charge. So it'll be Subaru's least expensive EV, and then for the Trail Seeker, which is basically an electric Outback, that one is also cheaper than its Toyota equivalent. The Trail Seeker starts at just over $40,000, so it's about $5,000 cheaper than the cheapest version of the BZ Woodland.
Which is weird. But yeah. You know, with that $5,000, you can buy so many dogs for your Subaru.
Mm-hmm. I know.
So many. You can do
or
so
you
many
can buy
dog
a couple
things.
Of dogs. You can get a couple of dogs and a lot of dog toys.
Yeah.
That too. That's
I get those little
option.
Things so the dogs don't scratch the
interior. I was thinking the car protectors. That's actually
the
what I was
car
thinking.
Protectors.
So to put on your doors,
and the
to
little,
put on the
like,
seat.
Yeah.
You got they the, give them
yeah,
little things
all that
so they
stuff
can't
that,
scratch everything up. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what you do with the extra money.
Get the Subaru and the dogs that come with it.
So, I haven't seen specifically what equipment is on the base version of the Trail Seeker compared to the BZ Woodland. But, it does have the same all-wheel drive, 375 horsepower setup as the Toyota. So the important parts are identical. I've seen some photos from some of the reviews. The Trail Seeker did not have the all-weather floor mats in it, so maybe the base version doesn't come with the all-weather floor mats. Buy a really nice set of all-weather floor mats for a couple $100.
If you go to WeatherTech, anytime you buy anything from WeatherTech, WeatherTech's really the only thing keeping magazines going. You open any automotive magazine, like half the pages are WeatherTech ads. So go buy some WeatherTech stuff, I guess.
If you're interested in, an electric, slightly off-roady wagon, probably get the Trail Seeker. Yeah. Better value than the Toyota. Mm. This year, union workers at Stellantis will not be getting a profit sharing check. The first time since the company, since the company merged, since FCA and PSA merged to become Stellantis, no profit sharing checks at Stellantis because Stellantis lost like $26 billion last year.
There weren't profits to share.
Come here. All the Stellantis workers are at home and a guy just comes in, he just starts picking things up that looks expensive. He's like, you got any rings? You got any hey, the
profit
sharing
goes
way,
backwards.
Buddy. Both ways.
You each owe us $5,000.
But my grandmother gave me that ring. Yeah, that's probably good. Well, see you next year.
Yeah, Stellantis reported a net loss of 22.3 billion euros due to 25.4 billion euros of unusual charges, they call it. I love how describe that. Full year unusual charges.
That's the miscellaneous you put on your own tax return.
It's like when you look at your bank statement, you're like, what the hell is this?
And it's just like codes and letters, like five. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You become Columbo trying to figure out, like, okay, the date. Like, what was I doing on that date? And you realize it's like some stupid thing that you bought, like, or something you pay for all the time. You're like, oh, just the name is weird.
Okay, Russell always does Kickstarters for games that have the weirdest names, and then he forgets about it. Because Kickstarters, you do it today, and you pay for it in whatever the heck the thing is.
Yeah, so three, 4 years later, something shows up in the mail.
And it's like, and it'll be the weirdest names, because it's some, like, pirate game, and it's like, Arg Media. I'm like, what is this? Like, I don't even, I'm like, Russ, did you buy something? He's like, oh, yeah, it's a Kickstarter I bought, like, 8 years ago. That's my digging through, trying to figure out what random charges are.
I got a $209, like, credit from Ticketmaster the other day.
Why?
And I'm like, what the hell is this? This is from tickets that I sold in September. They didn't pay me until a few days ago.
Wow.
The show's already happened. The show happened in September. I probably sold them in August, to be honest. So I sold them in August. The show happened in September. I just got my $200. So, yeah, I should charge them like a convenience fee for that.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. That should work both ways, definitely.
Yeah. Anyway, that sucks for the Stellantis employees, though.
Yeah, you know, I mean, at least, you know, Ford and GM, even with their losses, I think they're still getting profit-sharing checks.
Yeah.
But that does suck. So, speaking of paying weird fees, a woman in Florida, it figures this would happen in Florida, has been getting fees from her local town for parking cars in her driveway. So, I mean, this is a common thing if you live in a neighborhood with an HOA, homeowners
HOA.
Association. Mm-hmm. But this is not an HOA. This is in Lantana, Florida. Apparently, you're not allowed in Lantana, Florida, you are not allowed to park cars on your lawn at all.
All right.
And so, you know, they have four cars in the household, you know, her and her kids. You know, they each have a car, and they, you know, they need them to get to work and to school and everything. You know, she owns the home. She's not a renter. And so the way, you know, the diagram they show here from the Institute for Justice, which was trying to defend her, you know, shows the four cars parked side by side in the driveway, and the two wheels of one car are slightly on the grass, which apparently in Lantana is illegal. And it's a $250 a day fine for parking your car with wheels on the grass, which is just insane.
And so that's awful.
Yeah. So she has now racked up fines of $165,000. While they've been fighting this.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, because her house is the corner lot of a four-way intersection. So, you know, it's not practical to park one of the cars on the street.
Wow.
This is insane.
Talk about petty. That is so petty. There's like,
yeah.
This is HOA level insanity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, it's.
Wow, this poor woman.
Yeah, this is nuts. And, you know, they took it all the way to the Florida Supreme Court. And the Florida Supreme Court refused to hear the case.
Well, why? Because they technically broke the law, or not broke the law, broke the rules. So
yeah, I mean, the Institute for Justice representing Mrs. Martinez said in court that they were trying to get the egregious fines reduced under Florida's excessive fines clause. But the Florida Supreme Court recently refused to hear the case. The senior attorney, Ari Bargle, told CBS News, six-figure fines for parking on your own property are shocking. The court's refusal to hear Sandy's case is a disservice to all Floridians. And I agree. This is ridiculous. You know, if you live somewhere that charges fees like that, it's time to get involved in politics and start running these people that make these laws, running them out of town. This is insane. $165,000 in fines for parking on your own property.
That. Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Yeah. All right. Continuing along, new research study from University of California, Santa Cruz, found some interesting results that, they did this in simulation. They were simulating autonomous vehicles, and they found in the simulations that if you put someone in the scenario holding up a sign, you could fool the autonomous vehicle driving logic to ignore the rules. So they simulated this, at a crosswalk, had a crosswalk in this scene where you're supposed to stop. And they put someone in the scene holding up a sign that said, proceed. And when they did this, the car, the system just drove right through the crosswalk without even stopping.
Wow. So what it thought it was, did it think it was like a, what am I trying to say? Like a road sign?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, it's reading as if it's a road sign, so, they called this, command hijacking against embodied AI. So
command?
Basically, when
wow.
you're using, a camera centric system like this, it's trying to read the text of signs, and, at least the system that they were testing, this is certainly something that can be overcome. If you're aware of it, you can put things into the software, should be able to get around this. Certainly a human would know that, hey, this is not legit.
Right.
And in fact, the attack didn't succeed every time. It depended on, they had to do it certain ways. Like when they did it with black text on a green sign, it was unsuccessful and the car did stop. It didn't process it. But when they put white text on a green sign, which is actually what you typically find on highway signs.
Yeah, that's a highway sign then, those colors. Yeah.
Yeah. It assumed that it was legit and it just carried on right through the crosswalk.
Wow.
So, there's still a lot of things. This is one of the reasons why we can't rely entirely on end-to-end AI systems for this type of thing. And I think, I can't remember if I talked here on the show about what NVIDIA announced at CES in June. They announced their new end-to-end AI driving model called Alpha Mayo. But what they do in their system is, they have an end-to-end AI model, but they also have what they call a safety and policy evaluator that basically has rules in it. And if the AI model tries to do something that violates those rules, then they have basically a complete secondary automated driving system that is more rules-based, and it switches over to using that. So in a situation like this, I would think that hopefully what it would do is the safety evaluator would say, no, that's wrong, use the output from the classical model instead of from the AI model.
Right. Somehow, they didn't somehow figure out to say, if somebody's trying to mess with things, make sure you you default to this, you don't get faked out, basically.
Yeah.
Well, this is the issue with literally any system, is that no system is hacker-proof. Nothing. Everything can be compromised. Everything can be hacked. Everything can be, it's just somebody said, hey, what if we just held up a green sign with white letters?
it's kind of like social engineering for AI.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So the idea that every time some military grade, that's not a real thing. Whenever someone says military grade security, that's not real. That's not a thing that's real. Whatever, if you get pitched anything that says military grade security, turn around and walk away.
Yeah.
Run. I don't think walk is the right thing. Run away.
Yeah.
Run away very quickly.
Just hit report spam, block sender.
Yeah. So it's the idea that these systems can be confused, hacked, taken over. I mean, this is going to be, the more these systems are going to be used, the more that people are going to figure out how to get around them. And if you follow InfoSec in any like real way, there is some really interesting ways people have gotten around systems over the years. That, I mean, the idea that you could read what's on a hard drive via sound is something that some
That's
Israeli
crazy.
security researchers have been doing, this is like 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. So you could figure out, just because they could hear the hard drive moving. If you could hear the hard drive, you could recreate what the hard drive's writing.
Yeah. Like, oh my gosh.
One of the interesting things that I heard recently was about Wi-Fi. Using Wi-Fi to detect the presence of someone in a room, you know, or something, someone or something moving around in a room, because, you know, as basically bags are, you know, 70% water, humans interfere with radio signals. Our bodies interfere with radio signals. And so by looking at the Wi-Fi signals and seeing how the signals fluctuate as somebody moves around a room, you can see what, you can figure out what they're doing.
Wow. There's nothing like if you there's nothing more terrifying than becoming an InfoSec reporter, because the first 3 months you're like, I kind of know what's going on. And then around month four, you're like, oh dear. Oh my God. Wait, what? Oh no. And then by month six, you're like, yeah, nothing's real.
These
people can do
an
anything.
Illusion.
And you meet these people and they're just 99% of them, security researchers, hackers, whatever. They're just really nice people who just think in a different way from how the average person thinks. And the way they, and it's great because it kind of teaches you to start thinking in that way. So it's a wonderful experience, but it's also one of those things where at the end of the day, we're like, oh yeah, nothing's secure. Wow. Like nothing I do. Yeah. So you become paranoid like me. Right.
They all turn into Robbie. That's what
happens. All turn into Robbie, which is not great, to be honest.
You definitely don't want to get too deep into security. It will make you feel very sad.
It can paralyze you if you're not careful. When I was a security reporter, I don't know why. I think there's some sort of like, hey, I hacked this journalist who's a security journalist. And so people would try to hack me. They try to break into my accounts. Like I had people at like DEF CON, which is the big hacker conference every year, try to trick me into things. And I'm like, come on, man. And one of them was he was a reporter, like air quotes, at like one of at a site. And he was trying to trick me. And I'm like, dude, come on. I know better. He's like, all right. He's like, no, they're doing this. I'm like, no, they're not, man. I'm like, you're trying to trick me. Come on.
All right, let's carry on. So a recent rumor I've been seeing this past week is that Ford wants to build a Lincoln SUV based on the Bronco. Because, you know, they want to have their own G-Wagon, a Lincoln G-Wagon. The Utopian, Brian Silvestro wrote a piece, said Ford's rumored Bronco-based Lincoln sounds like it might be the Lincoln Blackwood all over again. The Blackwood was not great.
It was just like, hey, what if we put some pinstripes on a truck? Boom, luxury. That was
pinstripes. Yeah, you know, so the cab was, you know, was basically a standard F-150 crew cab, except it only had four seats inside. No bench in the back seat, and it had the front clip from a first gen Lincoln Navigator, and then it had this tiny little bed on the back that had a hard flip up tonneau cover and side hinged doors for the tailgate. And it was lined with aluminum or stainless, might have been stainless steel.
Some sort of metal.
And it was carpeted. And it was shallow. It was stupid.
Because they didn't want you to see the hump for the rear tires, the rear wheels. So instead of giving you that space, they just squeezed it all in. So it's like a teeny tiny little bed that you don't want to put anything because it has carpet for some reason.
It was basically a big trunk. I mean, it was actually a very nice, very large trunk.
But it didn't have the tonneau cover, so it wasn't like you could like get into the trunk as like you can put like people back there to like hang out unless you like sat at the very edge. It was just weird. Yeah. It was a weird, weird thing, and I think four
odd
people
choice.
May have bought it.
Yeah.
So I had Gemini do a rendering There's a link in the chat, Nicole, if you haven't looked at it yet, of a Bronco with basically the front end styling from a Nautilus and the wheels from a Nautilus Black Label.
I don't see it.
Go in the you can click on the drive link that's right next to the Autopian link, and
I got it. D15. I see it. Thank you. It's kind of cool.
Kind of cool. No one should sell it. No one should buy this.
But somebody would, and it's kind of the ridiculous of this is ridiculous, but also kind of amazing. I swear those wheels are almost the wheels they have on the exact Lincolns, don't they?
Yeah, well, that's what I told it to do. I uploaded a picture of a Nautilus Black Label and said, and you know, put these wheels on it. And because originally it had made the wheel arch extensions black. And it's like, you know, if you're going to do a Lincoln, it's not going to have black wheel arch extensions. They're going to be body color.
Definitely.
Like on a G-Wagon. And, you know, it kind of has a G-Wagon vibe to it.
You know what? It has a vibe. Like, I don't hate it. I don't hate it, Sam. I don't hate it. If they built it like that.
They might sell at least three or four of them.
Three or four. I mean, maybe five even.
They did sell like 3,400 Blackwoods. So, you know, it could probably sell at least as well as the Blackwood.
There you go.
I mean, it's
there
not the worst thing that they've done.
Yeah.
But
it's not
I mean,
the worst thing they've done.
The current crop of Lincolns are very just me. I'm just sad.
You know, as long as
they had this, such a great run for like 5 years, like everything they were pulling out, like, this is amazing. And then they're like, hey, hold my beer.
It was strange, right?
Well, they started doing this nonsense with the touchscreen controlled vents. And as long as they don't put that in the Bronco, you know.
Literally, if they just grabbed a regular Bronco and just slapped the Lincoln logo, like didn't change anything else, just slap a Lincoln logo and make the inside a little bit prettier, I'd be like, ah, that's fine.
All right. Speaking of premium off-roaders, Rivian has launched a new department called the Rivian Adventure Department, or what we like to call RAD.
That's good. That's a good name.
Okay, guys.
I'm going to give someone a high five at Rivian if I ever talk to them.
It literally says that. Or what we love. I thought you were just being sarcastic, Sam, with your description.
No, that is literally what it says on this page.
That's literally what it says. Or what we like to call RAD. It literally says that right on the site. I missed that initially.
High five. Listen, Toyota has TRD, which is turd.
Turd. Mm.
Which is...
Yeah.
So this is
you want a TRD truck? You're like, yeah. Can you scrape those letters off the side? So it doesn't say TRD.
So basically, the point of RAD is to, as they say, should we push this further? The answer is always yes. So, you know, this is kind of going to be their, you know, their AMG, their M division, their TRD Pro. You know, the high end versions of Rivians,
the off roady high end, whatever.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of cool. I think it's neat.
Yeah, I do like the color scheme. You know, there's an R1S here.
Yeah.
It's with the green and yellow and red and white.
Yeah, that's pretty dope.
It's actually really cool looking. Yeah. Yeah,
I would, if that was offered, I would buy that.
I bet a lot of people would.
If that was offered and I were Rivian rich, I am not a... Rivian's, again, I think I've said this before, it's the Patagonia.
Yeah.
It's the Patagonia. That's an apt description.
Yeah.
But, you know, you might be able to afford a used Rivian.
There you go. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe
I
that's
look.
The way to go.
Maybe I should look.
Yeah. Like how much do used Rivians go for? Yeah. Look up
nice.
A used R1T on Auto
Trader. I just get angry about the vents, though.
That's true, yeah.
Carvana has a used R1T from $35,990. They have 44
in
stock.
Oh, they're the same one. 35? That's pretty good.
Yeah.
There we go.
I wish they'd had. I wonder if I could like hack the. Just put a stick in the. I mean, that shouldn't be too hard. I could 3D print new vents and just unplug the stupid thing and just put a little thing.
You could figure out a way to make it work.
I'm hacking the Rivians so that they have vents because for the love of no, No, I didn't know.
Yeah, do it. Let's see you do it. Let's see you I hack like ravines to make their vents work the way you want them to work.
I know. That should be my next career thing, where I just buy cars and hack them to make them less
annoying.
Less annoying. You're like, you know what? I'm going to take this door and I'm going to hack in and I'm going to put a regular door handle on it. That's my tip. I'll sell kits to people. I'm like, here you go. Now your Rivian doesn't, you have to wait for a door to pop out. You just open it like a regular car.
Like a regular old car.
It's just, I don't understand what we're trying to fix things that aren't broken.
Just to make your life challenging.
Yeah. they just want to annoy us. I mean, they know we're out here, that we hate stuff like that, and they just want us to be annoyed.
It's just like every time they update, like any, like I complain a lot about Adobe products, and I use a lot of Adobe products because they never fix anything. They just add new features that no one wants. And I'm just like, could you please just fix this one error? And the latest Photoshop breaks Save for Web, something that's worked for decades. And they're like, oh, it just doesn't work now. And so the other way to save doesn't have nearly as many options for fine tuning your images for the web. And I'm just like, what are you doing? Your only job is to like make images and then save the images for either print or web.
That's all you need to do.
99.9% of the images generated in Photoshop are going on the web. They're not going to print.
So. Exactly. Yeah. I don't know what they're. I don't know. But anyway, that's car makers are doing that too. They're like, what are you doing? We just want a door handle. Yeah.
I don't need it to pop out.
I don't need a sliding magic opening charger port. Gas sliding ports magic. Don't do that. I just click it or I pull it open. Just do that with the EV port. I don't need more complications.
Don't add more motors when you don't need to.
Exactly. Don't make things that could break.
Yeah.
It's clever for the sake of clever.
What's the thing, Kiss? Keep it simple, stupid.
Keep it simple, stupid. That's how me, Johnny Appleseed, going from car maker to car maker. Hey, everybody, how about like where we're going to take them? No. No
Stop
one wants
right
that. I know you're all excited about it. I know like some tech bro is really excited about it, but the rest of us don't want that.
All right.
Sorry.
So
it's the middle of the day. I'm all hopped up on caffeine. Sorry. I'm used to these are usually morning things.
You should have gone with
the
caffeine free Diet Coke like Nicole did.
Caffeine free Diet Coke. Yeah. See, there you go.
I just had a little baby Diet Coke earlier today.
A giant one. There's not very much left in this since we sat down.
So you know how I like to complain about Toyota's 4-cylinder engines not sounding very good.
Oh yeah, they're very loud.
Well, compared to some engines, they actually sound great. Have either of you two ever driven anything with GM's old Quad 4? 4-cylinder engine that launched in the late 1980s?
I have. No.
I think.
Maybe? Probably not.
I mean, I remember reading about this thing before it came out. You know, it's like everybody was all excited. Oh, yeah, GM's going to do a new twin cam, 4-valve per cylinder, 4-cylinder engine for their smaller cars. You know, finally going to have something to compete with the best Japanese. European engines and Japanese engines. Yeah. And then they introduced the Quad 4. And it was not good. In fact, it was pretty damn awful.
Oh, GM. They put it in everything.
Oh, yeah. You know, it was originally supposed to, you know, it was originally developed for Oldsmobile to use. And Olds did a couple of really cool concepts called the Aerotech. You know, so it was basically, you know, this really aerodynamic, you know, kind of a race car, and they put a high performance turbocharged quad four in there, and they used it to set all kinds of records. AJ Foyt used it to set a closed course land speed record with it. You know, went like 260 some miles an hour around the Texas World Speedway. They set all kinds of records with this thing. But when they actually put it in production cars, it was a really, really unpleasant experience. It was a 2.3 liter 4-cylinder. When they first launched it, it had no balance shafts, so it was kind of shaky.
So it just jumbled around in the engine bay.
Yeah, and
they put a milkshake in there.
They used instead of a timing belt, they used a timing chain to drive the camshafts, which is actually good for durability because timing belts typically last about 50, 60, 70,000 miles, and you got to replace them. And if you don't,
but you're adding rigidity to that. You don't have any.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the reason why most companies use timing belts to drive their camshafts is they're a lot quieter. And yeah. So, you know, it was noisy. It was harsh. It took, you know, like 7 or 8 years before they finally fixed most of the problems with it.
Oh, that's a problem. Yeah.
When my first job out of college, I was working for Dahlco Moraine, you know, GM's parts division, working on ABS systems. And it was a project that I wasn't working on, but I got a chance to drive the prototype one time. Do you remember the Dustbuster minivans, the Pontiac Transport?
Oh, yeah.
And they were going to sell a version of the Pontiac Transport in Europe as an Opel. But you know, in North America, they only sold those minivans with a 2.8 liter V6 and an automatic transmission. And for Europe, they wanted a 4-cylinder engine and a manual transmission. Mm-hmm. So they put the quad 4 into this minivan, and it had a 5-speed manual. And I got a chance to drive it at the Mesa Proving Grounds one time. And, oh boy. That was something.
That's something you want to repeat? You don't want to do it like that again? No.
No, thank you.
no, thank you.
So anyway, the Autopian's got a good article about let's see, what's the title of it here? 3 decades ago, Pontiac managed to offer more noise, vibration, and harshness per liter than any other sports sedan. And it's about
something you hope that your company can claim someday?
Yeah. So there's a bit of history of the X cars and how that evolved into what eventually became the Pontiac Grand Am and the development of the Quad 4. So it's a fun story to read if you're interested in some of this historical stuff.
Yeah. By the time the Quad 4 had put in the engine, like every young person did not want a Pontiac. Like they had a Fiero, and that's it. That's the only thing that Pontiac made that anyone cared
and,
about.
And they never did put the Quad 4 in the Fiero.
I know they didn't.
Which is what they should have done.
Well, it kept catching fire.
Yeah, well, there's that. Yeah.
Details.
All right, we got a question this week. Came in from Tom B. From Patreon. So Tom asks, as I listened to Nicole's interview of Mazda in-vehicle technology project manager, Matthew Valbueno, is there any talk in the industry about being able to upgrade the infotainment computer? As Matthew said, the average age of a vehicle is 12 years and average consumers keep their smartphone for less than 3 years. Wouldn't it make sense to upgrade the infotainment computer after 5 to 10 years that would have faster processors and support new cellular, Wi-Fi, and Bluetooth standards? What about security upgrades? Since new cars can get updates on their infotainment system over the air, will the manufacturers keep sending out security updates for 15 or more years? I know I wouldn't want a 10-year-old phone or tablet running my car infotainment system. Matthew didn't say anything about that, did he?
No, that he didn't talk about.
Yeah.
He didn't say anything. I mean, what do you think realistically, Sam?
Slim to none.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, one of the few instances where this has happened was with Tesla on the early Model S's and some of the Model X's. They did offer an upgrade for the multimedia computer unit, the infotainment computer. But that's more because they were failing than because they actually wanted to upgrade it, you know, and they didn't want to keep putting in the old parts. So they had upgraded it, but you know, they were having a lot of warranty claims with the original ones, and so they did replace a lot of those, and they did offer even for ones that hadn't failed, they offered an upgrade to customers for $1,000 or something, $1,500. It was not cheap. I think that the chances of this happening are very slim, and they're likely to get slimmer as we move to vehicles with centralized computer architectures. You know, right now, you know, most cars, you know, they have a separate box that drives the infotainment system. They got a box that drives the powertrain and another one drives other body controls and your driver assistance systems. And so it's one thing to replace just that. But, you know, they're moving to system architectures where everything is going to be in one box. And that's going to be a real expensive box to upgrade.
Yeah. So, and it's a big difference between sending you a download, downloading stuff whoosh through the air, as opposed to bringing your car in and physically putting something in your car that has to now work in your car and be connected in your car and not make any mistakes about and not have any issues with. And yeah, make sure that the new thing works with the 10-year-old everything else. That seems like that would be a big ask.
Yeah. So, I mean, realistically, you know, for stuff like that, you're probably going to get, you know, software updates for at best maybe 5 to 7 years. And then, you know, after that, it's basically going to be static, which, you know, is kind of what you get with an iPhone.
I was going to say, your phone does the same thing. There's a point where it gets old enough that they say, okay, guess what? We don't support it anymore. You're going to have apps that stop working because the apps are designed for newer generations of stuff and they aren't making it backward compatible with older iPhones. So it happens with an iPhone at a certain point too, you know?
Yeah.
Just a little easier to buy a new iPhone than it is to buy a new car. But
yeah, that's true. Although, you know, I mean, even now, you know, we're used to driving older cars that have older systems in there. You know, at some point, you know, in the life of a car, it'll just become static.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, my 2014 BRZ doesn't, I mean, the infotainment thing, I can plug a phone in and it'll play the music. It doesn't have CarPlay or anything, right. But I can like pick like forward and backward.
Yeah.
I can go forward, I go backward, I can just, but that's pretty much it. So I just plug my phone in and use that. But it also has a CD player so I can listen to CDs.
A CD player.
It does have a map, a mapping software, but it doesn't really do anything. Hmm. And it's based on an SD card. So if I take the SD card out, yeah.
Everything.
So it just has.
Oh, I remember having a navigation system I messed up at a program once because the SD card wasn't right. Like take that out and put that in. And I did. And then it wouldn't read anything. And they're like, well, everything we need is on that navigation that you can't access. I'm like, so other plans?
You got one printed on a piece of paper?
Mm-hmm, exactly. Yeah. Can you print something for me?
Thanks. All right. Well, that's all we've got for this week. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And we'll be back next time.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.